From the studios of 2RPH in Sydney, this is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome to the show. Top 10 and a trip to Howarth County, Dublin. What could be better than that? Top 10? What top 10? I hear you ask. Well, top 10 motor cars, that's what. The boundless top 10, no less. We'll even have a look at the winner. And to this, we add, well, just about anything that blows through the window while we're going round the track on our way to County Dublin this afternoon. We've got it all covered, as usual, at 30 laps this week. So, let's kick off straight away, shall we? The Range Rover has been voted the most iconic car of all time. But do you agree? Well, let's find out who else is in that list. I reckon it'll come from an English magazine. Yes, here we are. Look at this. It's from thesismoney.co.uk by Rob Hull. Finished and published as well on the 26th of February this year. The Range Rover was one of the six, surprise, surprise, six British cars to feature in the top 10, including the Aston Martin DB5, the Jaguar E-Type, and the original Mini. There are some questionable rankings, though, including the Skoda Yeti and one place ahead of the Ferrari F40. Now, this is in the top 100 cars of all time, but we're only going to concentrate on the top 10 and look at the winner, the Range Rover, because we'll be here all day if we did 100. I'm sure you would agree with that. Anyway, let's get on. A public sector and civil service membership club has named the 100 most iconic cars of all time and selected the Range Rover as number one. The all-terrain luxury 4x4 first launched in 1970 beat even James Bond's Aston Martin DB5 in the list, which included production models available to customers, racing stars from years gone by, and even big screen creations such as the Batmobile. In case you're wondering what boundless credentials for picking up the top cars are, well, it should be noted there was originally one that was called the Secret Service Motoring Association, and it was launched 97 years ago and used five motoring experts to pick up a list for the vote. Behind Bond's famous silver Aston Martin, which took second spot, was the Jaguar E-Type. And in a boost for the UK, six of the top 10 are British brands. Oh boy. But do you agree? The most iconic car ever, the Range Rover, took the top award in the list of 100 most memorable cars, crowned ahead of the racing machines, famous television motor, and famous vehicles from the big screen. The definitive list of iconic motors was put together by Boundless, as I mentioned, the public service sector members only club and magazine, which began in 1923 as the Civil Service Motoring Association. Here we go, let's see who they are. The judges involved and included Boundless's own motoring editor, Dan Reed, Fifth Gear presenter, Vicky Butler Henderson, and Top Gear magazine road tester, Paul Horrell. The remaining voters were Michael Tambini, the creator of the Cotswolds Motoring Museum, and Pete Gregory, who is a Motorsport Committee Group member. And here they are. Number one, Range Rover. 1970 to the present. Number two, the Aston Martin DB5 from Goldfinger, Number three, the Jaguar E-Type from 1961 to 1975. Coming in at number four was Mini from 2000 to present. That must be the redesigned Mini. And number five was the original Mini, Mini Cooper, from that wonderful movie, The Italian Job. At number six, a car that we've done here on 30 laps, the Mark II Jag from Inspector Morse. Number seven, the Volkswagen Golf from 1974 to the present. Number eight, Ford Fiesta from 1976 to the present. Number nine, the Audi Quattro Rally Car, 81 to 86. Number 10, it really is an English magazine. Number 10, the Citroen DS from 1955 to 1975. But let's use the same magazine to look at the winner, the Range Rover. The Go Anywhere Luxury 4x4 went into production in 1970 and has been present ever since. The Range Rover is famed for its off-road capability as well as being a plush luxury car for the road. Now in its fourth generation, it remains immensely popular. Alex Drew, editor of Boundless magazine, said, "Who'd have thought that from such a short list, including the DB5 and the original Mini, the Range Rover would poll 52% of the vote and come out on top?" Of course, the Range Rover, nominated by our columnist and Fifth Gear presenter Vicky Butler Henderson, isn't just any 4x4. It's a British classic, a homegrown hero, capable of extraordinary adventures as well as everyday chores. It's the car that does it all, and which, since the original model arrived in 1970, has shown that luxury doesn't contradict utility, but actually enhances it. The Aston DV5, famous for its appearances in a number of James Bond movies, was voted as the second most iconic car of all time. The beautiful E-Type Jag made it in an all-British top three. In fact, there were six UK cars making up the top 10 rankings, which we've already discovered. So I think we might leave that there. What do you reckon? Thanks to Rob Hull and thisismoney.co.uk. We started off with all things English on 30 laps today, so it's time we had some American music. Not just any American music either.
Well, all you ladies all gather round, that good sweet candy man's in town. Is the candy man, is the candy man.
Mississippi John Hurt, hey, doesn't get much better than that. We haven't got the Candyman this afternoon, but we have got the Range Rover Man. And this comes from osv.ltd.uk, which is a UK car buying service. A brief history of the Range Rover. We take a look at how Range Rover became one of the top British cars of all time. And it was written, of course, by our good friend here at 30 Laps, Anonymous. Range Rover was one of the youngest of the British marques and was launched in 1970. However, the idea for a larger Land Rover series first originated in 1951. It was shelved in 1958 and remained untouched until 1966 when the engineers set to work on a new model. The first Range Rover prototype was built in 1967 and finished in 1969. The Range Rover had a different front grille and headlight configuration. In the year of 1969-70, 26 Velar engineering development vehicles were built and road registered. The name Velar comes from the Italian velare, which means, it sounds much better, doesn't it, which means to veil or cover. It was a Range Rover engineer that coined this name as a decoy when registering pre-production Range Rovers. There were about 40 of these pre-production Range Rovers, and they are still all accounted for. But anyway, the Range Rover was launched in 1970 and is even shown in the Louvre in Paris as an exemplary work of industrial design. Not many cars you can say that about. In 1972, a specifically Specifically, modified Range Rover was used for the British Trans America Exhibition, which was the first vehicle-based exhibition to travel the Americas north to south. These modified Range Rovers are now on display in the British Motor Industry Heritage Trust. Between the years of 74 and 87, Land Rover vehicles were only sold through the grey market. A grey import vehicle is a vehicle that, either new or used, is legally imported from another country in a way that other than the official distribution system. The import of grey market vehicles, or parallel import, is actually largely banned in the United States now and in Vietnam, but that's a story for another day. Anyway, Land Rover began selling Range Rovers officially in the United States in 1987 because it was the only model available in the US marketing, and the marketing was all in the name of Range Rover until 1993. It was in 1993 that the Defender 110 was launched and the launch of the Land Rover Discovery was imminent. After that, the company was marketed under Land Rover Discovery instead of Range Rover. Because there was only one Range Rover out at the time, Range Rover Classic didn't become the Range Rover Classic until 1994, when the second generation Range Rover was launched. Interestingly, the Range Rover was not meant to become a luxury vehicle. Compared to other SUVs such as Jeep, the first Range Rover was fairly basic, although more upmarket than a Land Rover. It was designed to be more convenient than to be a status symbol. For example, it had vinyl seats and plastic dashboard that could be washed down easily. It had power steering and a permanent four-wheel drive. The original Range Rover was powered by a Rover V8 and diesel engines. They only introduced their own diesel engines in the Range Rover when they first launched Range Rover Discovery. You're with Richard Lyon on 30 Laps with Dick, and we're all over the Range Rover this week like a damp chamois. The second generation Range Rover was launched in 1994, and it was around this time that BMW bought the Rover Group, meaning they also acquired Land Rover and subsequently Range Rover. It was because of this that the second generation Range Rover also came with an option of a BMW 6-cylinder turbo diesel engine. The new model also came with more equipment and premium trims, signalling the start of Range Rover's venture into the more luxurious SUV market. This also placed it above the Land Rover Discovery to compete with the growing SUV market. It was also the first model to feature sat-nav as an optional extra. The third generation Range Rover moved the mark even further upmarket as it shared its components with BMW 7 Series. It also dropped the manual transmission, leaving only automatic available. However, the 7 Series electronic system was phased out during the development stages and instead was replaced with the electronics from a BMW 5 Series. Jaguar Land Rover is a subsidiary of automaker Tata Motors and was created in 2008. Its main focus, as you can probably guess, was the production of Jaguars and Land Rovers and Range Rovers. The two marks came together under British Leyland, first of all back in 1968, and then were both owned by BMW Ford, owned by BMW. Ford later acquired Land Rover after the Rover Group split. Getting confused yet? Boy, I know I am. Land Rovers and Jaguars, too many English cars. Anyway, while it hasn't been quite plain sailing for either mark after the formation of Jaguar Land Rover, sales went from strength to strength, despite the 2008 financial crash and the recession that followed in Europe. Photos of the Range Rover Sport were released in 2004. The new model was to be unveiled on the North American International Auto Show during the same year. The Range Rover Sport is a production car that stemmed from the Range Stormer concept vehicle. The Range Stormer was showcased at the same auto show in 2004. The Sport is actually an adapted Discovery with Range Rover exterior and interior styling and a smaller luggage capacity. It was priced at the upper end of the Discovery models, but still became the best-selling model of the Land Rover product. Of course, this success has continued with the launch of their second version that was released in 2014. No monkey business there, of course.
Running to and fro, hard working at the mill, never fail in the mail, yet come a rotten bill. Too much monkey business, too much monkey business, too much monkey business for me to be involved in.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. To his mates, Chuck. We lost him this year. Now, we couldn't, they say, write an article on the history of Range Rover without mentioning the Range Rover Evoque, a popular sight on British roads. The Range Rover Evoque has become quite the status symbol. It went into production in 2011 and is almost identical to the Land Rover LRX concept car. In 2012, at the Geneva Motor Show, Land Rover unveiled a convertible Range Rover Evoque, which we know proved just as popular. And that brings us to the present day. Only a few weeks ago did Range Rover announce that they were bringing the Velar back, a car that fits between the Sport and Evoque. You can read more about the Range Rover Velar here. Well, no, you can't, but anyway. While Range Rover have a short history, it's been fruitful and successful. So successful, in fact, that it cemented itself as one of the great British car brands. And we can't really see that changing anytime soon. If you're interested in the latest Range Rovers, you can use our search function. No, you can't. You can use me. Write to me and I will give you the information. Richard Lyon, 30 Laps with Dick. Thank you from osv.co.uk, a UK car buying service, for everything you didn't really need to know about Range Rover. Sticking with engines, not English engines, Australian engines, supercars. This is just hot off the press, from Rebecca Williams in the Daily Telegraph in May. Restart your engines. Supercars will release and relaunch its championship season on June 27 in Sydney after almost 4 month hiatus amid light return to racing measures. After the championship was put on hold at the Australian Formula One Grand Prix, Supercars have confirmed its plans to return to racing at Sydney Motorsport Park late June in a television-only event. The return date comes as the series laid out strict protocols for teams, drivers and staff at the track to comply with government restrictions on social distancing. Teams will charter flights from Melbourne and Brisbane for the round, stay in the hotel outside the track, and there will be heavy restrictions on the number of pit crew and staff allowed at the track. Drivers, team personnel and officials will be expected to undergo medical checks before entering the track. The opening round, June 27-28 in Sydney, will be a two-day only event, scrapping the Friday practice. But it will not be under lights as planned in the original calendar. The race format is yet to be finalised. It's fantastic for us to have the date to get back to go racing. There's been a lot of work going into this and we will continue to work within the restrictions, Supercars Chief Executive Sam Seema said. We think Sydney is a key part of our fan base. It's a huge market domestically, but it also makes really good logistical sense for our teams from Albury, Melbourne and Queensland as well. Pit crew numbers will be restricted to 11 people per two-car team, plus the drivers, and there will be a limited broadcast crew on site as well. It is also likely to run without any support categories. Similar to every other sport in Australia, we've gone through an extensive process to draft protocols around where we can operate events under the current restrictions. And then, as government restrictions ease, we will amend these protocols. And Seema went on to say, we are working on the basis of not only meeting social distancing restrictions, but also head count per square metre. So there are extensive plans that we have gone through, from managing the pit garages. The teams have been critical in this process, so there is a reduction on the head count and the pit crew. Particularly for the first round at Sydney Motorsport Park, teams will be chartering flights in and they will stay at the hotel over the road. We've managed the TV crew and how many people are in the TV trucks, so we've gone through a very detailed plan to be able to get going again. So there you are. Those of you out there who enjoy supercars, it starts again in late June in Sydney. And that's from Rebecca Williams from the Saturday Daily Telegraph, May 16.
Hello, cat. I just got back. And I'm looking for that place they call the Chicken Shack. They say it's fine as wine and it's really on a ball.
Yep, the Chicken Shack. It's a beauty. It's a favourite of mine, that one. Amos Milburn. Anyway, look, I thought I'd have this, bring this to your attention. Since the kids are now back at school in earnest, there's been some research done around accidents. And this comes from Drive on in Susan Guthrie, who writes... that's drive.com.au. As Australian children return to school from holidays, new research serves as an important reminder to exercise caution with school pickup time found to be particularly dangerous on our roads. According to the latest AAMI Crash Index, over a quarter of all road accidents in Australia occur in the afternoon around school pickup time. The new data is in line with recent research that found parents are some of the most dangerous drivers on Australian roads, with more than half of them admitting to speeding or driving distracted with their kids in the car. AAMI analysis of 340,000 insurance claims from 1st of July 2018 to 30 June 2019 found that 27% of accidents occurred between 1 p.m. and 4:30. All types of road accidents were considered as part of the AAMI Crash Index, such as nose to tail, failing to give way, and collisions with a stationary object. The research included accidents occurring during school holiday periods. Regarding the prevalence of accidents around school pickup time, Russell White, the founder and CEO of the Australian Road Safety Foundation, said it was likely as a result of the melting pot of different factors. You see high volumes of people channeled into relatively small areas, so there's obviously a congestion issue. Then you also see people under a moderate to intense time pressure, and you see pinch points in terms of attitudes to other people, aggression, horn blowing, and the early stages of automotive violence. Then you bring young children into it, focused on where they're heading to next, so the cumulative effect of all those makes school zones and pickup times highly risky. AAMI also received data that was the worst day of the week, Friday, followed by Thursday and Wednesday. Late mornings between 9:30 and 1 were apparently the second worst time for accidents, accounting for 24% of claims. AAMI findings find other research conducted by the body that found parents of children to be more of the country's most dangerous drivers. What's more, having kids inside the vehicle does not appear to serve as a deterrent for these dangerous drivers. We've all seen them. According to the survey, 52% of Australian parents admit to speeding, using their mobile phone, or driving distracted while their own kids are in the car. Additionally, 1 in 5 parents admitted to taking the same risks when driving a vehicle occupied by somebody else's children. When it came to drink driving, a third of parents admitted to driving over the legal alcohol limit. Parents are also overrepresented in responses regarding speeding on a regular basis, with 75% admitting to this dangerous behaviour, compared to 67% of those without children. People don't know what road trauma is the biggest killer of kids aged 0 to 14, White told Car Advice. If you replaced that with something like swimming pools, that would have a completely different response. Things like compulsory pool fencing, CPR lessons, it's about a cultural view around road safety. White urged parents to be conscious of driving behaviour, given their children would likely take cues from them. School speed zones. Let's look at New South Wales and the ACT, Tasmania and the Northern Territory. School speed zones 40 kilometres per hour or less and are variable and based on school timings. When asked whether more needed to be done to decrease road risks in school zones, White said, at the very least, we need a national consistent view on the situation. People aged 16 and under accounted for 48 deaths out of the total 2019 national road toll of 1,188 people, according to the Australian Road Deaths Database. And that's sobering news, folks. Comes from drive.com.au, which is a Sydney Morning Herald drive advisory program. It was written by Susanna Guthrie, and it coincides with, I guess by the time you hear this, all the kids will be back at school. That's about it for us this afternoon. Very sobering article on children's safety, speed safety zones. Please be careful around schools all the time, not just between 7:30 and 9:30 and 2:30 and 3:30, 4 o'clock, I beg your pardon. Let's be careful the whole time we're out. And of course, we had a heavily English skewed article on the Range Rover and the top 10 vehicles out of the top 100. And how would you? Well, it's no surprises being an English magazine. Four of the vehicles, I think, out of the top 10 were English. I've certainly enjoyed bringing you the show this afternoon. I hope you've enjoyed listening to it. We didn't get to Dublin, but we'll save that for another trip when we're probably looking at Irish cars, if there are. So, well, the DeLorean was built there for a while, wasn't it? We featured that a few weeks ago. Thanks again for your company. I look forward to talking to you next week. And until then, bye for now.